Oh, for goodness sakes, Chrissy, we talked about this. Halloween decorations go up in mid-September at the earliest.
Okay, one, rude. Two, you're a party pooper, and you bold of you to assume I actually take down my Halloween decorations. And three, not me. This one was not me.
If it wasn't you, then who? James?
With my allergies, you think I'd decorate with real cobwebs?
Which, exactly how do real cobwebs form overnight? Anyways, are we being haunted?
Ooh, this is just while we were fumigating the haunted inn. We had an infestation of Girl Scouts, you see. Ooh.
Oh yeah, they do take things over, don't they?
James, a ghost just said that to you and you didn't even bat an eye?
You can blame me for that one. I kind of put him through hell back on our old podcast, Baker Street Irregulars, when I took him to Castlevania.
Wait, I just walked into one of these and I can't get it off. This isn't even a real cobweb.
Is this spun candy? Really, boys? Really?
There are too many cartoons, but they'll watch them all. The Penny and James Minnesota, hopefully funny cartoon podcast.
Hello, everyone. I'm
Gesundheit.
James Edwards.
And I'm Pembroke W. Corgi. God, I still can't get this off me.
Here, let me help. And I'm Chrissy Harding.
Welcome to the Pemmy, Chrissy, and James kind of sort of hopefully funny cartoon podcast. And this week, we're getting a little obscure.
Just a tiny bit.
A little.
See, a new thing we're trying is each one of us presents to one of the others three choices of cartoons to review. So, Pemmy was presented a trio from Chrissy, consisting of Hare Bear Bunch, The Perils of Penelope Pit Stop, and Alf. To our surprise, he picked Alf.
I know, it was kind of a shock. I figured he was either going to go, I thought he was going to go for the Hare Bear Bunch.
If you pick something other than Alf, I probably would have. It's just the Alf show is such a really kind of neat, weird show that I thought felt like it needed a little more credit given to it, if that makes sense.
And the end result of our podcast certainly bore that out.
Yeah, it was a nice surprise.
Pemmy, in turn, presented me with a choice of Challenge of the GoBots, Astro and the Space Mutts, and today's subject, Shake, Rattle, and Roll.
You gotta shake, rattle, and roll. You gotta shake, rattle. What? It's
Sadly,
the
I
theme
think.
song of Clue.
Sadly, I think Challenge of the GoBots was the best of those three options.
I was about to say, I am actually kind of surprised you did not pick Challenge of the GoBots.
Well, I, knowing I wasn't ready to attempt Astro and the Space Mutts.
I don't think anyone is actually ready for that.
Yeah. And I wasn't sure I was interested in GoBots for this year's toy tie-in show. So I picked the third option. Was this a wise choice? Well.
Just so everyone knows, I did end up actually making a run to the liquor store today. Yeah.
Ooh, nice.
So I did get us a selection. Unfortunately, Crunchy has not gotten back to us yet about where I'm supposed to ship this for him for next week. Get on that, Crunchy!
In 1977, Hanna-Barbera was beginning to feel the effects of being their own biggest competition, as we've documented fairly extensively on this very podcast. Now, in that context, you can see the anthology series CB Bears as an attempt to get back to their roots with short subject cartoons like the ones that made Yogi Bear, Huckleberry Hound, and their other core funny animal characters hits. Not to mention, those cartoons were still being used in syndication in varying capacities. It didn't work.
Yeah.
No.
Well, we could say it maybe worked with one of them, just not this one.
The six cartoons to come out of the show, which were the headlining CB Bears, plus Posse Impossible, Blast Off Buzzard, Hey It's the King, Undercover Elephant, and yes, Shake, Rattle, and Roll, they did not join the likes of Snagglepuss and Wally Gator in the company's roster of Cartoon All-Stars. They didn't even make the B tier occupied by the likes of Loopy de Loop or Precious Pup. They came, they went, and they scarcely came back.
Except for appearances in Jellystone.
We'd like to report a murder.
Of all of them, Shake, Rattle, and Roll seemed to have the most going for it on paper in terms of premise. A trio of goofy ghosts running a hotel for the supernatural? That at least sounds fun, even if it invites comparisons to Horrible Hall and its Filmation-created denizens, the Groovy Ghoulies.
I definitely think of the six shows, this is the one that had the most interesting concept.
I agree. Of course, I'm also partial to the supernatural, so I like anything with ghosts.
The ghosts, named Shake, Rattle, and Roll, as the title suggests, work to satisfy the needs of their guests at the Haunted Inn while contending with a ghost hunter named Sidney Merciless, and on occasion, a ghost mouse causes some mischief that their poltercat has to stop. Oh yeah, and the inn isn't even theirs. It belongs to a Mr. Tyler Taylor, who has Sidney on the payroll to evict the spectral squatters.
This was the office before the office was a thing.
So basically, it's a workplace comedy given a supernatural spin, which doesn't sound like a bad idea whatsoever. But as you know by now, it's all in the execution. No, not that kind of execution! Jeez, Chrissy, where'd you even get that thing?
You'd be surprised what you find on Amazon. Besides, it helpful in the kitchen. You just put the vegetables in and it cuts it for you.
Did you get that delivered from France?
No, although it was, the last time it was used in France, I believe, was 1985.
So, setting that thing aside as much as I possibly can, Shake is performed by Paul Winchell, reiterating on the voice he provided for a Booby Bear on Help, It's the Hair Bear Bunch.
Though actually more intelligible than Booby.
Yeah. We've heard Paul on this podcast before as Dick Dastardly and as Woofer of the Clue Club, but he's still arguably best known as T-I-double-G-er.
Tigger.
Tigger!
Heck yeah, Dick Dastardly! Sorry, had to throw that in there.
Another returning voice to us, Lenny Weinrib, who of course originated the voice of Scrappy-Doo, performs Rattle in a similar voice, though a little more mature sounding.
I don't know what it is about Lenny Widrib's voice in this, because I've heard him in multiple shows and I don't have a problem with him, but I really find his vocal mannerisms really annoying in this. Like he holds on to certain words and just mispronounces things, and it just, I don't, and he keeps raising and lowering his pitch a lot. It just gets on my nerves and I don't know why.
I'm sorry.
I want to punch him.
So I do want to correct myself. The last time that guillotine was actually used in France was 1977, but it was outlawed in 1981.
Oh. The more you know.
Yeah.
The more you know.
But hey, here's a voice we haven't heard, but we've heard impressions of. Joe E. Ross of Car 54 Where Are You fame performs his role the cook, complete with his requisite verbal tick.
One, I'm going to say I think he's the best part of this show. I'm going to give Joe E. Ross credit for that, even though I think he did this show probably because he needed a paycheck.
Most likely.
But I also want to say that since it is Joe E. Ross and he only does really one voice, it just makes me feel like this is the ghost of Botch from frickin' Help, It's the Hair Bear Bunch. So I just keep imagining him being like, ooh, Mr. Peevely! Mr. Peevely! I'm dead, Mr. Peevely! Ooh!
Even in death, you won't be quiet, Botch.
Do I get my promotion? Ooh.
You've already been promoted to the afterlife.
I was about to say, probably being dead might be a promotion in that case. So here's my question. So which came first, the CB Bears or the Hair Bear Bunch?
The Hair Bear Bunch.
71 compared to 77.
I wasn't sure. That's why I had to ask.
Yeah.
Fair
though
question.
If we were watching the actual CB Bear segment of this, it actually does relate to the Help, It's the Hair Bear Bunch, because Dawes Butler plays Hustle, and it's just Hair Bear's voice. It's just Hair Bear's voice. He didn't even try.
I also like to state, out of the three ghosts, I do think Roll was my favorite watching in this whole thing. And I think a lot of it does have to do with Joe Ross's voice for Roll. And he's a cook.
By the by, Roll basically looks like Greedy Smurf let himself go.
That's fair, too. He does. I didn't
think of that, but
that is a very good descriptor. I had to use
that on the Instagram last week.
That made me laugh way more than it probably should have.
Finally, the reoccurring Sydney Merciless is none other than the voice of everybody's favorite hammy 80s bad guy Skeletor, Alan Oppenheimer.
Though I can't help but wonder if originally they were going to get Paul Lynn to do it and that didn't happen, because the voice that like Alan Oppenheimer does in this sounds like a weird cross between Paul Lynde and like Skeletor. It just kind of feels like a character that Hanna-Barbera would have totally casted Lynde in.
It does.
It does. You're
and
right.
Can you imagine Paul Lynde and Joey Ross in the same room?
Oh, I'll definitely make you roll.
That could be kind of funny. I would actually want to watch that.
Now, coincidentally, Wikipedia claims these ghosts' voices are odes to impressions of Hugh Herbert, Lou Costello, and Marty Allen. Honestly, after I did some quick searches for the first and third voices, since I was less familiar with them than I was with Lou Costello, hey, Abbott!
I hate that guy. Sorry, I had to throw in a Bud Abbott line.
I also know that line from Mel Brooks' Men in Tights.
How could anyone mistake Joe E. Ross doing nothing but Joe E. Ross things for any of those three? I mean, I guess Lenny's voice could be interpreted as Lou Costello's, and Paul Winchell's voice might be considered close to Marty Allen, but that leaves Joe's grunt voice as the wiggy giggling of Hugh Herbert, and...
No.
No.
No. No, well, I would also just point out it is Wikipedia.
True.
So, and here's the thing. Apparently, they even had a source for this.
Wow. Maybe that was
I couldn't look up the source because it's one of those books you got to jump through hoops to get online. But still, this is proof that you check Wikipedia and then you double check yourself.
Well, that, and even though it gives a source, doesn't always mean the source is accurate. There's been issues with that, too. But besides that, like, the only one of those actors I'm really familiar with is Lou Costello, and yeah, I don't hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is why I sent you guys that Hugh Herbert Looney Tunes video before we recorded.
I still love that last part of that compilation. It's like, you're not allowed to sleep in. I don't sleep in myself. Insomnia. I was like, that was really funny. That was a really funny delivery.
Oh, I also wanted to throw out there, in case anyone's asking, no, Alan Oppenheimer is not related to J. Robert Oppenheimer. So there, the creator of the atomic bomb.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, shall we dig up the grave on these episodes?
I got the shovel!
Let's start with Spooking the Spooks, which we have no writer credit for.
At least it's not Jeffrey Scott.
It could be.
I don't think it is. He's not credited with anything on CB Bears, to my knowledge.
I don't think it is either.
I'm gonna have any of his style,
I guess, for lack of words.
I'm going to assume whoever wrote this is probably the people who were probably credited with writing this, the actual episode for the CB Bears. I'm sure they all shared writers.
They probably also didn't want to be credited.
That's fair, too.
So the episode opens with Shake and Rattle having to turn away customers because there's no vacancies. You'll notice Rattle puts the old-fashioned phone receiver through his intangible head so it goes... out the other side of him. That's at least a cute bit of visual humor.
It does kind of make me wish they had more of a transparent effect on the ghost, though, but that's probably a lot harder to do back in the 70s than it was in, like, the 80s.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I mean, they're still figuring, in some ways, still figuring out what they can do and still make it look good.
Now, of course, spooks don't spook these spooks, just humans. especially Sidney Merciless. Why, the very mention of his name gives their guests the screaming memes.
I didn't know this was a Madball crossover.
I didn't either.
Ghosts literally come out of the woodwork and have to be reassured it's a false alarm. And Shake scares himself into the inkwell at the desk.
That's also a cute little visual gag, too. Yeah.
Also, why do they give Rattle a freaking the Larry Fine haircut?
Larry, Moe, and Curly? Because I do notice that between them.
I was kind of thinking more they were trying to go for the Chico Marx look.
It could be.
With the hat?
You know what? That's actually...
That's almost more accurate, yeah.
That is more accurate, yeah.
So just then, the ghost catcher alarm goes off. And it's Sydney with a fully automatic ghost-catching robot named Roby in the passenger seat. Cue the stock Hanna-Barbera computer sound effect for all of 3 seconds. But don't worry, it'll be back.
It usually comes back, people.
And of course, the robot is very obviously voiced by Frank Welker.
You'll notice, folks, I'm goosing this episode with a lot of sound effects. Why? Because we really don't have a ton else to work with.
Is that, well, considering these episodes are only 6.5 minutes long?
Also, that robot's name is Roby. Very close to an excellent name, I might say. Very, very close to a very excellent name. It's not quite there. Might need an extra B, but, you know, very close.
Yeah.
Sydney educates his robot on the types of haunts thereafter, and his diagram's idea of a ghoul looks more like a background extra from Wait Till Your Father Gets Home.
Or Uncle Fester, but I guess he would count as a ghoul.
I think he, yeah.
At that moment, the ghost mouse pops out of its mouse hole and ties the string of the pull-down canvas around Sydney's leg. You can guess the rest.
Honestly, when I first saw this and I didn't realize the ghost mouse was like a separate identity, I honestly thought this was Shake shape-shifting into a mouse to cause trouble. And then I realized later it was a ghost mouse. And I'm like, oh, the mouse is a separate thing. Okay.
I also just noticed that they actually misspelled weirdos on that. It says weird do.
Well.
Search me.
Spell check wasn't a thing back then, apparently. It was the 70s. It looked good. You went with it.
Also, animating the robot getting Sydney down is apparently too expensive. So they just cut to the buzzard clock calling 12 o'clock and all's bad before the hunt is on.
It is a cute little touch because, you know, cuckoo clocks are cute. So being a haunted place, having a buzzard clock kind of fits.
You know what? I would love a cuckoo clock that has a vulture or buzzard as the cuckoo bird. I think that's actually kind of awesome.
I'm sure there's one on Etsy. I'm sure someone's done it.
As the robot goes upstairs, we watch Sydney pursue spooks downstairs, playing the earliest known haunted-themed version of Monopoly. And I have a writing question here. If this episode's hook is supposed to be the robot, why aren't we sticking with it first? When you have such a limited amount of time to tell your story, lead with the unique element, I say.
And that makes you a better writer than most cartoon writers of this era.
Though I do want to say that Rattle's earlier comment about the only thing that scares him is humans is a very fair comment as a human myself.
And that's why I prefer dogs.
Anyhow, Rattle has to get the attention of the guests. And as they bolt, he's left alone when Sydney storms in.
I do want to point out that he literally tells them several times that Sydney Merciless is here. And it's like before they're like even the mention of his name, they're all freaking out. And it's like he said, Sydney Merciless is here. No response. Sydney Merciless is here. No response. Until he yells it. And then they're like, oh, yeah, that's right. We're supposed to be scared.
Hey, they're really into their game of Monopoly.
I'm waiting for well, I can't say much. My adopted nephew at the age of eight did trash talk during Monopoly with my best friend.
Someone must have bought all 4 ghost trains, and nobody attempted to suplex one of them yet.
They also look like they're using real money, so, you know.
Well, you know, in the afterlife, you have no use for real money, so why not?
I want to say one thing that I do think is positive about Rattle's design. I like the fact he has giant tennis shoes. I think a ghost with giant tennis shoes is just a funny design, so I want to give at least one positive to this.
That's true. That was a cute touch.
Next, we find Roll breaking up a group of skeletons making a midnight snack.
That is cute.
That actually is funny. Ooh, not now! Sydney Merciless will get you!
When we do find Roby, he's ramming through the doors of the hotel one by one, very much a step behind the ghosts and their guests, to the point that he sees none as Sydney radios in.
I do want to give another credit here, because before Roby goes through all of them, you see the ghost running through each of the doors, doing the Scooby-Doo doors routine, but since they're ghosts, they're just going literally through them, passing through them, so kind of a clever take on Hanna-Barbera's old Scooby-Doo doors gag.
I also like the fact that Roby also goes through the doors, too.
Literally.
Yes.
So clever take on an old gag.
Yeah, it was a nice take on an old gag.
Sydney brings in Mr. Taylor to report the good news, and as Taylor is paying the poltergeist pest control expert, the phone rings. Taylor brags the ghosts are all gone to this potential client who wanted the spooks.
No.
He's a college professor studying ghosts and would have paid $2,000 for the privilege.
Oh, he's a parapsychologist, and that was a thing back in the 70s.
Suddenly, Mr. Taylor is angry that Sydney apparently did what he was paid to do.
Which isn't fair to Sydney, to be honest.
Yeah, this is the one time I really actually feel bad for Sydney, because he did his job.
Roby takes his creator and crashes through a wall for an escape, and Roll laughs that Sydney never had a ghost of a chance.
Listen, we would pick on them if they didn't take the pun. We really would.
Joey Ross using all of his acting talent to try to make that joke fly. I'll at least give him credit. I like the animation of Roll slapping his knee. Something about a ghost doing that is amusing.
Yeah.
Even if that joke was... yeesh. I like puns, and even I'm like, yeesh.
Yeah, that's fair.
On the other side of the break, we'll see if things improve. Spoiler alert, not quite.
That's fair.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
On our next podcast episode, it's Johnny Cypher in Dimension Zero. Yep. Kind of speaks for itself. Oh, and Crunchy is joining us, so check it out in 2 weeks. Please. I beg of you. So a lot of these titles follow a similar structure, quick little gags on ghostly themes, which, you know, Hanna-Barbera is used to after this point. They've had 8 years of experience.
Yeah.
They got it down to a
science. Right, Raggy?
Zoink, Scoob! You think they're talking about us?
Of course we are.
So this episode is The Ghostly Ghoul is a Ghastly Guest.
And we start with Shake doing the same gag that Rattle did in the previous episode.
Yeah.
Right on up to scaring himself into an inkwell.
Well, that too, but I also was referring to him putting the phone receiver straight through his head.
So my question is, because I know we only looked at 2 episodes, does Roll do this too? Like, do we actually have all 3 of them at some point in time in this cartoon do the receiver through the head bit, or is it just to the first 2?
I don't recall seeing Roll, but we also don't have all the episodes of this either, because it's pretty hard to get a hold of.
That's fair.
Well, we should mention that also they're taking a call from the Headless Horseman, who needs 2 rooms.
Yeah, we don't need to spell out to you people why he needs 2 rooms, but if, you know, you kind of get the gag.
But as for repeated gags, I hope against hope that the fact we're seeing these 2 episodes in a row is a coincidence, but it ain't much hope.
You keep, hope is hard to kill, but, you know, you keep hoping. I see lazy writing.
The ground quakes with the footsteps of an inbound guest, which is massive, and happens to be carrying a skateboard.
He looks like the ghost of Christmas future, or Christmas yet to come.
This is Crunch, who demands a room, and Shake lets him have his pick. The massive lug scares off all the other ghosts, all moaning about this new ghost. Also, regarding these footsteps, this must be one of those extracorporeal ghosts I've never once heard about, and I am thusly making up for the sake of going along with the plot.
He's heavy in spirit.
He's got some gravitas to him. Besides, ghosts can make footsteps. I mean, he did it all the time in my old house.
Maybe he's got extra ectoplasm. Solid ectoplasm.
Well, considering how much he eats later, I am not surprised we can hear his butt.
Yeah, it's a week later when we return to the protagonists, and Crunch has every customer terrified.
He has the owners terrified.
Yeah. He's also eating triple his weight. Just listen to this order.
Food!
I think he's trying to tell us he's hungry again.
Fried bat wings, 13 spider omelets, a cobweb casserole, and 5 stuffed octopuses. Got it?
I'll get it.
Of course, where there's cartoon food, there's often cartoon mice. And the ghost mouse scoops up one of the sandwiches for Crunch. The poltercat is called into action, and I want to lay a claim for false advertising because this cat is not a ghost.
Yeah, he runs right into the wall.
Yeah, maybe he's a poltercat because he chases poltergeist?
Well, I could get very technical, but I'll keep it brief. In the paranormal community, poltergeists are not technically considered ghosts. And I'll leave it at that.
They're still non-corporeal.
They're considered energy, but...
Either way, at least he recovers a sandwich.
Which is like a Shaggy Rogers level sandwich, I might add.
Yeah, it is. I'm like, maybe Roll is the ghost of Shaggy Rogers.
Well, he's making that sandwich for Crunch, so...
Yeah, but we see... Shaggy Roger level sandwiches in the last cartoon, too, with those skeletons.
True. Like I've started a fad! Anyways, I just had a thought, though. With how heavy Crunch is it possible instead of ectoplasm, he's ectoplaster?
That I can give you.
So Crunch bellows more, and Rattle states the obvious, that he's got to go. And while they bumble about with rescuing Roll from a massive octopus, we've seen enough anime to know where this is going.
I'm glad you said that joke before I did.
For once, James cracked the joke and didn't have to reprimand us.
Rattle hatches a plan for that night to scare him off.
Oh,
some
Lord.
Plan. With a chain, some bats, and some kind of crank-powered noisemaker.
Yeah.
Rattle tells them to be quiet. And Shake yells out, "Quiet!"
Don't!
This wakes Crunch up, and he gives them the business ends of their tools of the trade.
Yeah, he shoves the, noisemaker right through Roll's frickin' face.
Yeah, it's... Boys, I can give you an A for effort. I can't give you much else. I can't. did you really think this through? Really?
It feels hopeless. Until an unlikely savior pulls up.
It feels hopeless, like this cartoon.
It's Sydney Merciless. They whisper a plot as Sydney boasts of his ghost vac to the fourth wall.
Ghost vac? Oh, hey, I got one of those in the Ghostbuster Nest game. It helped you get extra money.
I have one of those in my Luigi Mansion game.
I was hoping one of you would point that one out.
Oh, that's a much better reference than what I came up with. Dang it.
I even finally got the stuffed polterpup from that game from the mail to the other day. He's currently hanging out on my couch.
The Luigi Mansion games are really good.
Guess who pre-ordered Luigi Mansion 2 for the Switch?
Nice.
So Shake, Rattle, and Roll call him right in, taunting him and saying they'll hide in the corner bedroom in the most blatantly overacted way. So blatant, only a cartoon villain could take it seriously. Hey, what do you know? Sydney's a cartoon villain!
Voiced by Alan Oppenheimer, the best of... one of the best at voicing cartoon villains.
Alan Oppenheimer, your go-to voice for campy cartoon villains.
So he vacuums Crunch right up and gloats on his drive out until Crunch emerges and terrorizes the occult Orkin man.
Okay, occult Orkin man, that's a genius line. Props, James.
That is massive props to you.
You can tell I had fun writing this script.
Which proves you are a much better writer than who wrote these episodes.
So shaking hands on a job well done, Shake switches the welcome mat to a stay away one just in case Crunch returns.
I love he feels like that's going to stop Crunch. I wish it was that easy.
I wish I had a stay away mat.
I have one that says definitely not a trap door.
Yeah, nice.
So to sum up how I feel about this cartoon, I've got an anecdote to share with you. Yesterday, I decided I needed a new dictionary, and I went looking for one that was fairly recent. So to test them, I looked for the word, meh. Sure enough, the first one not only had it, but had a picture of these three ghosts right next to it.
Ha! That was good.
This trio of characters aren't much on personality, which is a byproduct of doing an ensemble short with three leads mixed with a 6-minute runtime. And the few gags that do land don't really elevate it much.
No. I gotta say, as someone who's actually watched all segments of the CB Bear show, this probably is the worst one. And that's sad because of all of them, it has the best premise. Which is honestly really frustrating.
It really feels like it's the lower end of cartoon business as usual. It's not as boring as Lassie's Rescue Rangers, and it's not as incompetent as some of the stuff we've seen from Jeffrey Scott, but it's still pretty disposable.
Yeah.
It's one of those cartoons where I can see why no one saw a point to keeping it around. It's like
and some of the episodes just like one of the episodes I didn't choose for this because it was basically one of the most generic plots you could get. One of the episodes has them randomly find a like dinosaur egg in the fridge and it hatches a dinosaur that mistakes role for its mommy, and you can already know where that's going.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't pick that one because it's like I wanted to pick one that had something, and that one was one that definitely felt like absolutely nothing. and another one is we made a potion so Shake isn't scared anymore.
I regret
that because, you know, cartoon business as usual.
Exactly. You know, the really sad thing is that when... because I had absolutely no idea what this cartoon really was about when we first went into it until I started looking it up. My first thought going into this cartoon was, oh my God, it must be based off of the NES game about the snake that you eat things and it creates a longer snake.
Snake Rattle and Roll.
Snake Rattle and Roll. I'm like, oh, it must be based kind of off of Snake Rattle and Roll. And then it was like, no, it's based. And I'm like, oh, it's based off a ghost. That's even better. And then it was like, I hate you for getting my hopes up, Hanna-Barbera. I don't like you anymore. I don't like Hanna-Barbera. Well, it's just like, I mean, it's one of, if you seek this out, well, first, good luck. It's not the best. It's not the worst. We have others. Oh, we have others.
Yeah.
What happened with these characters after the show ran its course? Well, in syndication, when the 6 segments were split up into 2 blocks of 3, this one was with the block headlined by Hey, It's the King. And then, that was it. While the others have cameoed on other shows like Yogi's Treasure Hunt and Tom and Jerry Kids, or made guest spots on Jellystone, or were re-ran on Captain Kangaroo, of all places.
Wow.
Wow.
Jake Ratlin' Roll just up and vanished. They couldn't even get gigs as stunt doubles for the ghosts on Pac-Man or any of the later Scooby-Doo cartoons, for crying out loud.
You know, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they do appear in Jellystone in the future.
That's true. Jellystone's been making some deep cuts lately.
Greenblatt does want to try and get to everybody.
Yeah. I mean, they may be in the background somewhere, but they'll probably show up.
That's all the CB Bears do is show up in the background. But sadly, same with the Hair Bear Punch. But
you know what? That might actually be for the best. I mean, you can't have everyone have a guest show. I mean, I love what they did with Loopy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Loopy's great in Jellystone.
I love Loopy in Jellystone. Loopy is weird.
There's some hardcore Hanna-Barbera fans that will call blasphemy on me for saying this, but I think Loopy's improved in Jellystone.
So, to round it out, and going back to how we opened, Pemmy, should I have picked Challenge of the GoBots instead?
Personally, yeah, probably, but heck, people like it when we go over super obscure shows, so, you know, might be for the better.
And if you're wondering, the three cartoons I presented to Chrissy were the 80s My Little Pony, the early Pixar theatrical short subjects, and Tiny Toon Adventures.
I picked Tiny Toon's Adventures because I love that.
And you'll be hearing that in June.
Yeah, we're doing it as part of kind of like a June Bugs thing.
Shoot, I was going to say something else and I completely forgot.
Well, we'll give it a few minutes for you to think about it.
I got nothing. Wait, now I remember.
Although if we really wanted to make our next couple podcasts like the Podcasts of Pain, should have picked Astro.
Oh God. There's a positive I can say for this show. I like this show better than Astro and the Space Mutts. Astro and the Space Mutts is, it's so bad.
As we can tell from Cartoon Catastrophe.
Cartoon Commentaries, actually.
Oh, yeah. Cartoon Commentary. Sorry.
But yeah. Yeah, me and Crunchy has gone over a few episodes of that.
Maybe next year we'll be ready for Astro and the Space Mutts, but after our next two episodes,
this wasn't the year. I don't think you could ever be ready for Astro and the Space Mutts.
But I do want to say that the only reason why I have these episodes is someone actually gave me access to like a giant Hanna-Barbera archive. I'm not saying who, because they want to remain anonymous, because I don't think they want multiple people pestering them, but they know who they are, and thank you.
Not all superheroes wear capes, so thank you, superhero, wherever you are.
Well, in the meantime, shall we go scare up some breakfast cereal?
Yeah, I think I actually still have, like, some blueberry and Count Chocula somewhere.
Hey, I'm all for that. Got any Fruit Brute?
Probably might have that somewhere, too.
Have a great night, everybody. We will see you in 2 weeks.
See ya!
Bye, everyone!
The Penny and James can sort of hopefully funny cartoon podcast!
The preceding podcast is a co-production of the Mighty Monkey Corporation and Artificial Orange Studios. The theme song is written, composed, and performed by Sean Michael Smith. For questions and comments, email me at james@fc3roc.org.